Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Books and Beverages. I'm your host, Fred Kumalo of City Press Newspaper. In the studio today, we are joined by Subolo Fenyati, who writes under the name Suunyati. She is a novelist born and raised in Zimbabwe, but now based in South Africa, where she has written and published four critically acclaimed novels. The first one being The Polygamist, immediately followed up by The Gold Diggers, and then The Family Affair, a sprawling family saga which has got people talking about the meaning of family. And of course, her new and latest novel comes out in a week or two, and she shall be talking to us about that and her writing journey. Welcome to the studio, Suunyati.
So essentially with this book, I sort of went into the historical fiction genre. Oh. And so it's a story about a woman's quest to, you know, unveil her identity and assert her independence, you know, against the backdrop of Zimbabwe's rather complicated and compelling history.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Okay. How would it compare? I know your previous book, The Family Affair, there's a bit of history there about your profiling. You are scrutinizing the lives of this family. How will the new project compare in terms of theme or the thematic things that you deal with in the book as compared to The Family Affair, for example?
So I think with this one, instead of having one family, you actually have two families. So a black family and a white family.
Yes.
And the comparative, you know, differences between them. As the book opens in 1977, when the country was still called Rhodesia, mm-hmm. before independence, and it goes on post-independence. So, you know, unlike, you know, A Family Affair, which really zeroed in on, you know, the intricacies of, you know, being part of a family, I think this also looks at the bigger dynamic of, you know, racial identity as well. And, you know, in the context of Zimbabwean history. So I think with this one, there's more amplifying of the history,
okay.
you know, which okay. I think with The Family Affair was like more background. It wasn't in the forefront.
Sure.
Whereas this one, it has more of a bearing and impact on the story.
Okay, right. Yeah, well, what I've noticed is, going back to your first published novel, The Polygamist, it was very focused and central, focusing on this couple. And then with the next project, the lens was expanded, and you dealt with a more intricate and immediate challenge or problem crossing the border into South Africa. What that process entails and the dangers that attend it. Is this deliberate in your writing journey? Maybe let's go back. Let's
okay.
go back, right? The very first basic question what one would want to ask is, how did you get started as a writer? What inspired you to embark on this journey in the first place?
I think I've always had a love for writing, and it started at a young age, Fred, when I was like 7 or 8. You know, I think I liked telling stories. Even when I used to play, I used to act out stories. And then when I finally had the words, then I started to write them down.
Yes.
You know, I would cut out pictures from magazines and write around them. So I think that's where it developed, until finally I could actually write a full-fledged sort of novel without
yeah.
needing any pictures, but
yeah.
you know, I would use words. So the love was always there, and I think it really started because I loved to read a lot. I was a bookworm. And I think, you know, readers become writers. It's a natural progression.
Mm.
So for me, that's how, you know, it was because of the love of reading. And so the writing then followed. So I think, you know, the thing is with, I always say inspiration comes in many forms. And, you know, my different books are inspired by different events.
Mm.
I mean, for instance, The Polygamist, although it was published first, it wasn't the first book that I wrote.
So, no, I remember you saying that.
Sometimes
yes,
it's not necessarily the order, you know, that the books are published in.
Yes.
So, and The Polygamist was really inspired when I first started working in Harare, you know, my exposure. You know, I'd been one of those girls, you know, I grew up in a conservative Catholic home. And it was my first time to leave home and live in a big city. And it was that thing of, you know, you raised to believe that, you know, a man and a woman will get married and live monogamously. But then you're living in a city.
And happily ever after.
Yes. And suddenly you're exposed.
The lies we've been told.
So, yeah, then you're exposed to these different realities. And so my curiosity was piqued, like, okay, so, you know, people actually have these alternative arrangements. And it's not really polygamous in the traditional sense because, you know, my maternal grandfather was polygamous. He had four wives. And my maternal grandmother was the first wife. So I understood polygamy from a traditional perspective.
Sure.
But what I was seeing being practiced wasn't that kind of polygamy. So
how different was it?
Because, you know, with the traditional polygamy, I find it's consensual. And all the partners involved know about all the other wives, like who are party to the arrangement.
Yeah.
But whereas in that modernized version or bastardized version or whatever you want to call it, you know, the other wives are secrets, you know, and, you know, the main wife never knows.
Yeah.
You know?
Whereas traditionally, in some parts of this country in particular, the senior wife, the first wife, sometimes actually actively gets involved in the courting of the second wife and approves and so on.
Yes. I mean, traditionally, that's how it was supposed to have been done, because I remember asking my grandmother how it was being in a polygamous, you know, marriage. And she was like, there were more hands to do the work. So for her, it was a very, labor-wise. You know, and my grandfather was a farmer, so I could understand that, you know, the mechanics behind it. So there was no animosity. And I remember when he died, you know, the other wives left the homestead, and she remained, you know, alone there. So that's, I'm saying that was a different kind of practice. But here, nowadays, the polygamy that we have is very undercover, you know, underground, you know, and illicit, and, you know, which is, and very deceptive. So that was what led me to then write this book.
And then the next book, The Gold Diggers.
So The Gold Diggers was inspired largely by what was happening, you know, during, in 2008, when the xenophobic violence broke out in Alexandra. And subsequently, there were more other, you know, outbreaks. But then there were lots of conversations, as we have now, about foreigners, you know, with Operation Dudula. I mean, people are like, Zimbabweans and other friends need to go back home. And so it was a response to those conversations. Like, people wanted to know why are people here in the first place? And so the book wanted to explore and give face, you know, to illegal immigrants who come, because, you know, it's one thing when you're legal and you come here on a work permit or whatever, you know, skilled visa, but it's quite another when you have to jump, you know, the border. And then you have to exist illegally in the periphery of society, and how you can get exploited. So with that book, I was trying to, you know, give face to those illegal immigrants.
Okay. Different stimuli stimulate writers differently in different cultures and different locales. For example, George Orwell would be inspired by injustice. He would witness something in his capacity as a journalist and say, well, I have witnessed this, therefore I must challenge it. Then he would put on his creative writing hat and write a novel or a short story bearing witness to that particular injustice. Is that how you approach your writing, or is there a standard way how you approach your writing or your writing projects?
No, in a way, yes, but yes and no, in the sense that if I'm moved by something, it's not necessarily have to be something about injustice. It could be anything, you know. If it just moves me, you know, I'll be compelled to pick up my pen, you know. It could be like immigration is a heavy topic, it need not necessarily be a heavy topic like that. It could simply be family dynamics as well, you know. As long as it just moves me, you know. You know, then I'll be compelled to write about it.
And then we've seen a proliferation of writing in this country in different languages, in English and novels, short stories, movies, books being adapted for the stage or for the screen and so on. Where are you in that process? Are any of your projects, if you can speak about them, are any of them being considered for any other platform apart from the written page or the published page?
So we're living in interesting times. I think, you know, streaming TV has really opened up, you know, driven the demand for content. And I think, you know, book to film adaptations are becoming very, very popular. Mm-hmm. So three of my books have been optioned for film.
Wow.
Okay. So they're all in development. So I don't know in terms of when they would appear on film, but so it's something that has been done. But you know, sometimes read with these developments, at times nothing ever materializes.
I know.
Yes, three of them. So that would be the Polygamist, The Gold Diggers, and A Family Affair.
Wow.
Yeah, so those three.
Same production house or different production
houses? No, it's two production houses. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Now, I was talking to Angela about exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. Some of her projects as well have been considered for the screen. And so one question that I always ask is, how involved are you? How involved would you like to be in that side of the business, the adaptation? Would you like to say, okay, I wrote my novel, I told my story, that's where it ends, you can give me the money and I'll sit and watch? Or would you like to be involved there either as a consultant or even as a scriptwriter or a co-scriptwriter?
I don't want to be involved in the script writing. I think I tried it before. I remember The Polygamist was with another different option, which since lapsed. We tried that, and we tried to have me write it, and it didn't work. You know, and I think sometimes it's actually good to have distance, you know, between the originator and, you know, the adaptation. So I feel like you say, you know, I've done my part. It's taking on a different art form. On the screen. And so I feel like maybe let, you know, people, you know, who are in that, that's their forte, actually handle it. Not to say I can't write scripts. I mean, I do, but it's not, that's not really my, you know, my strength, you know, to put it, to put it succinctly, yeah. So I don't have that kind of attachment to say, look, I want to be involved, like, writing the script. No, I don't mind if there's another script writer who runs with it. But, you know, I think I would like, you know, just to be consulted creatively in terms of things like casting, you know, just have to have input here and there, you know, and just, yeah, and just be called on to, yeah, I'd like to consult on the projects. Because I think there are things that, as the originator, I would know. So that if they, you know, if people have questions or they don't know, you know, which direction to take it, you know, I can, you know, help weigh in there. So, yeah, that's the way I view it. I'm not really bambazonke kind of, you know, just give me my money. I'm quite happy. And, you know, like, I think, you know, with books as well, it's also nice when you see different kinds of adaptations. Like, I mean, if you look at Pride and Prejudice and how many, you know, films have come out of that.
Exactly.
And different ones.
Exactly. Different interpretations to the same story.
Nice to see that kind of thing.
No, it's always interesting to see how writers respond to that, to the challenge as well. But what is disconcerting, like Angela was sharing a story yesterday. She went to the set and she's there on the set interacting with the directors and so on. And she gets introduced to some actors and one of them didn't know the title of the book from which the script is derived. So when they said, this is Angela McCullough, she had no idea who this is. She was infuriated, but she kind of took it within her stride to say, maybe this person is not interested in books. She's just an actress. But that's kind of disconcerting. How would you respond to that kind of situation where one of the cast members doesn't even realize that this is an adaptation of a book and...
Yeah, I think it's, I think as an actress, as, or an actor, we're not allowed to call them actors, actresses anymore. I think it's, as part of your job, I think it, you know, you, and if you want to really add to the role, why not read the book? I think it would really add a lot of value.
A bit of respect as well, and character.
Yeah, but like you're saying, it's actually quite interesting. Sometimes some of the producers don't even read the whole book.
Yeah, they're adapting, you know, some don't.
they just get the synopsis. And you see, and it's actually quite unfortunate that, and that's how people's work gets, you know, butchered, in, you know, in terms of what they wrote and what becomes, you know, what is put out there. That's why I actually feel that that's why we need to have that distance to say, this is, my work is my work, stands alone. And that stands alone. You know, I don't want, you know, I also don't want, you know, to be a part of, you know, to take responsibility for what happens on screen.
Because
they're two different formats, and having worked in film as well, I also understand, you know, with writing, we have more leisure in terms of time and building the world, building the stories. Whereas with TV, you don't have the leisure of time. Unless it's like a telenovela, you know, where you can go on.
Or a series.
So I think you also need to have an appreciation of the differences as well. And the audiences, a lot of people who watch TV don't necessarily read as well.
They
might not really appreciate what, you know, the book. That's why you always get a lot of the time readers are disappointed with the film adaptations. Most of the time.
Now, what we also try to do, and this show is very new, is to use this platform as kind of a inspiration to aspiring writers, people out there. Because when we were starting out as writers, we didn't know where to turn. I mean, there was no social, there was no internet,
no where social media.
Google, social media, and so on. Younger people breaking into writing now are fortunate, but still they have many questions to ask of people as established as yourself. You didn't study journalism or any other form of writing at university. How did you get started? Maybe let's just ask, what did you study at university, and then how did you make the transition?
So I never did any creative writing courses at all. So I have a master's in finance and investment, which is totally divorced from creative writing.
Right.
So I'd like to say I'm a self-taught writer in the sense that, you know, I never did any formal education in
writing.
Yeah. So, you know, I just taught myself and, you know, used resources, you know, reading as well, you know, but, you know, there's a vast resource of material on the internet.
On the internet, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I remember a lot of the times I used to download stuff about writing, you know, and that helped me. You know, so I think a lot of the times, you know, people aren't really invested in the craft, you know. They're quick to tell us how do we go about it. Like,
They don't take the time and travel to find out. The resources are there now, online.
And they were even there then, back in my time. It's just that because I had the interest, I spend a lot of time trying to find out. And also, it's, you know, asking people in the industry, you know, and going, you know, I made, you know, an effort to say, like, how does one go about it? Because a lot of the times people just want to, can I, you know, just put me through to someone?
Hook me up. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work like that.
Yeah.
You know?
So
you have to do a bit more.
I always tell people, like, you look what are you writing? Look at the genre. Look at who publishes the books that you write.
You can't write a romance novel and then send it to Van Schaik because they publish academic books.
Yes, exactly. That's like your basic research.
Yeah.
You know, look at what, you know, if it's fantasy, look at publishers who publish fantasy, and those are the people then you can send your synopsis to. It's not everybody who publishes, you know, fantasy. So it's that kind of thing that you also have to do a bit of research. And what you want, you know, what you're writing, and the target market, and who's looking at that as well.
Okay.
Because we're not all writing the same thing.
Of course not. And what have been the challenges that you faced as a writer, creatively and commercially and otherwise?
I think for most of us, Fred, I'm sure you can attest to this, commercially, is that the sales, you know, the market for books is still very small.
Very small,
especially if we think if we look at like the South African market, for example, I mean, the numbers that we are doing are very, very small. I mean, we should be doing huge numbers, and we're not.
Because it's a big country, big
it's
population.
A big country, yes. Yeah, and if you think of how in other countries people are doing 1 million sales, and if you do 10,000 sales, wow, it's like, wow. You
it's
know?
Like, wow.
And
it's embarrassing.
Yeah, embarrassing, yeah. And those numbers are really depressing. Mm. And so I think it makes, you know, writing become, it's not commercially viable for most writers to do it full time. Mm. And I always say, we don't even need to sell a million. If I could sell 100,000 copies, I would be okay. That's what I'm saying. Like, not enough people are going out to buy books.
Sure.
You know, and I think that for me is the biggest challenge, is developing, you know, the commercial side.
Yeah. Some people have said, no, it's because you guys who are writing boring stuff that you don't want to buy. That's what they've said to me. Your stories are boring. That's why we don't buy. Because, let's be honest, there are many educated people in this country. Mm-hmm. Who have disposable income to buy books, but won't buy books. Mm-hmm. The excuse is maybe the stories that we are producing don't resonate with them.
But that's not true, Fred. How would you know they don't resonate when you have never read them?
Yeah, I know.
People always go for the international. Mm. If you look at our markets, the stores, most of the bestsellers, you know, are international.
Oh, James Patterson, yes. Stephen King.
So I really disagree. And I think people also don't prioritize reading, if you think about it. There are other things that they prioritize.
Oh, yeah, sure,
you know,
sure.
If you think of music concerts, you know, whiskey, you know, people just don't like to spend money on books. And if they're honest about it, people don't have time to invest in reading.
Sure,
because,
sure.
You know, reading requires commitment. You know,
not just financially,
time-wise, well. You know, you have to commit to sitting down and reading a book, which I think a lot of people don't want to make that investment. And so you find that it becomes a very niche market of readers, and that's what we have.
Okay.
But I disagree with that assertion. I think there's so much variety for everyone now on the local market that is being produced.
There's
everything for everyone.
Yeah.
You'll find it now,
yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. People, in case you've just joined us, this is Fred Khumalo sitting with Sue Nyati at our studios at City Press. Books and Beverages is the name of this program. We're talking about books, writing, selling books, and celebrating local literature. When I say local, I'm talking about African literature. And now, Sue is very active online, so you can follow her on Twitter. You can follow her on Facebook, Instagram, and so on. Please don't say she's not accessible. She's out there. She's out there. And please buy our books. Celebrate South African literature, African literature in all its diversity. She's just pointed out, there's everything that's on the offering. There's romance. There's crime. There's family saga. There's historical fiction, and of course there's a lot of good non-fiction that is about topical subjects in this country, including load shedding. So guys, please join us again next week as we say goodbye, and thank you very much to Sue Nyati, who was gracing us with her presence and talking about her books, starting with The Polygamist, The Gold Diggers, and Family Affair, and the latest novel that's hitting the shelves in the next few weeks. Would you like to say anything else to our listeners out there, Sue?
I'd just like to say, please go out and buy my book. Thank you in advance, and thank you so much, Fred, for having me on your podcast.